And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we're going to be speaking with John Philpott, who is an experienced criminal lawyer, and he's a member of the Quebec Bar since December 1984. He's practiced criminal law in Montreal since 1984, as well as international criminal law since 1998. Mr. Philpott is a pioneer in international criminal law trials, which is why we need his expertise today on a number of matters. We want to talk about the case of Paul Rusesabagina, the hero of the film Hotel Rwanda, and who is now in custody in Rwanda. And it's a very unfortunate and nasty situation he finds himself in. And the world is, we hope, paying attention. And we're going to be asking John about this matter. We're also going to be talking about an action which began with, I think, Roger Waters and Noam Chomsky and others raising the issue of Israel recruiting soldiers in other countries. And John's going to tell us about that. And lastly, we're going to talk about the Meng Wanzhou case, which is of very great interest to all Canadians. And it's certainly a matter that is very consequential for everyone. So, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
John, both you and I have, over the years, gotten to know Paul Rusesabagina. He's been a very eloquent spokesperson. Both as a witness to the events of from 90 to 94, and particularly the war and massacres that took place in 1994. He also has become known as a critic of the government of Rwanda. And I assume that's why we now have this circumstance where he finds himself in custody in Rwanda. There's, I think many people are scratching their heads how this could have happened, that he, who is a Belgian citizen and resident of the United States, legal resident of the United States, would be in a trial in which they're not discussing how he came to be there. I know you've taken this up, you raised it in various quarters. So, and I guess on one detail, he was in court, I understand, only a few days ago, and they've extended again the beginning of the trial, but not for long. I think he's scheduled for the 27th of November, and he told the court that though he has a lawyer, that he has not met him. There has been no conversation. And yet the prosecutor wanted to proceed, as I got that from the BBC. So that's a package of matters. What is, you've raised this with various legal organizations, African bar people. What points have you made about the Rusesabagina case that everybody needs to know?
Well, there's a lot to be raised. He got on a plane in late August, going to Burundi to speak to some church groups. And the day and a half later, he ended up in Kigali. He was bound for 3 days and kept isolated. And he appeared before a Rwandan court defended by two lawyers named by the government, David Rugasa and a woman named Iverle. Now, they didn't raise the question of how he got there. This appears to be a very, very illegal rendition, and it was a kidnapping or hooker by crook. We don't know how he got on this plane in Dubai, which raises questions, of course, else how that happened. He was apparently put on a private Greek company's charter plane. We don't know whether he went through the customs and got stamped, but he ended up in Rwanda. And the US law, which is pretty strong, kind of lets you, no matter how the person gets before the court, they can proceed. This is a case of Alvaro Machen, which I followed about 20 years ago in the US, and it's based on the Kerr-Frisbee doctrine, which is an old American legal doctrine. This man here is a Belgian citizen, as you mentioned, has a US green card. Now, these lawyers did not raise this fundamental issue. Paul Rusesabagina has a team of international lawyers now, and there's been a small improvement that he rejected his two Rwandan lawyers, and the Kigali Bar allowed him to have Gashabana. But this gentleman, his lawyer, was on trial in Arusha on a kind of important trial, which has been ongoing for the last couple of years. So I think he's returning. Now, you mentioned about this trial coming soon. In fact, it's a curious situation because they wanted to charge him with a whole lot of other accused. Now, are they going to try and make some of the witnesses turn against him? I don't know. I know that some of the allegations about his supporting so-called insurrection or attacks are probably fake Rwandan attacks, but of course I'm not at, I don't have firsthand news of all this. But having a trial in the end of December, this requires preparation, and you know as well as I do that preparing an important criminal trial requires very serious preparation, because I'm sure there's a lot of arguments against that he would like to make, showing he was not involved in that. And so rushing this ahead is a very dangerous situation. I'd like to comment a bit about the Canadian and American attitude. Canada said, They said, we are sure he will have a fair trial. This is Canada parroting typical Canadian behavior on many international affairs. And the defense of Paul Rusesabagina has lawyers in the States, and they are trying to raise this with the US government. The statement of the US government about a month ago was that they want him to have a fair trial. But a fair trial is not the issue. The demand of Mr. Rusesabagina and his family is that he be returned. And this is what should be done. He cannot send them back to the US or to Brussels. And let's remember, you know this as well as I do, Phil, Rwanda has extradited people frequently from the US. I think there's 4 cases. And they also managed to put their hands on somebody if they're deported from the US under immigration regulations. Why did they not do this time? Well, we know that they probably would have hit a brick wall in US extradition courts, because we think there is no evidence. And so Paul Kagame, as usual, tries to cheat the legal system and has tried to go beyond, to violate the fundamental rules of international relations and extradition, and kidnap this man by hook or by crook. Mm-hmm. Now, the situation is extremely worrisome. I'm in touch with the defense, and I verify, I try to keep up to date on it. I presented a paper on this at the African Bar Congress 10 days ago.
By the way, is that going to be available?
My paper, I sent it to you by email, and it will be on the site of the African Bar. And I'd like to just make a point that the African Bar Association has been very supportive of this work. And I'm off topic, but they had Judy Rever speak. And Judy Rever cannot even get a platform in Europe or in Canada. And they admired her, and she was very well accepted. And there'll be a Congress at the end of February in Niamey, Niger, and a good number of us will be attending and will be raising this issue, these issues, in the center of Africa, where we are not censored like how it's done in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. I want to just go back though. The getting international lawyers is a big problem for Paul Rusesabagina. The Kigali Bar says, well, if Rwandan lawyers get reciprocity and they can argue cases in the U.S., they would allow them to argue. That argument has some validity. I can't comment on it. But what they won't let him do is consult with his lawyers, because his lawyers, Vincent Lurquin and Philippe Larachelle, who we all know, tried to go and see him, and he weren't allowed to see him. And I know I myself, I visited in Colombia, a very important criminal, accused criminal, with respect to certain issues, which I won't talk about, but I didn't go before the Colombian courts. But the right to consult with counsel is essential. So they have refused him the right to consult with his counsel. And this is an international affair. It's not purely a local affair. So there should be and must be some way of bringing international lawyers into the process, whether or not they can actually argue before the court. We know that they have in the past, and we'll see about that, all right? Well, there's another. Do you have a question, Phil?
I'm sorry?
Another interesting procedure which has been undertaken is Mr. Rusesabagina, through his Rwandan lawyer, with the support of the international team, has filed a type of habeas corpus application. That's not the exact term. It's a motion for relief before the East African Court of Justice. And the issues raised fundamentally are the following: illegal rendition and asking him to be returned back to reverse this process. And secondly, the violation of his rights, being held incommunicado. Apparently he was gagged for 3 days and not getting bail and not being called before a court on time, not knowing the charges against him. And this is a process which is ongoing.
Yes.
Now,
John, I think you know about some of the details here on the matter of, he is a 66-year-old man, I believe. He has blood pressure problems and other, recovering from cancer. This has become known as a result of his being in this situation. I haven't heard that the court addressed that at all.
The court refused bail, and they refused bail 4 weeks ago. And I don't know whether there is a new bail application, but this man is in very difficult conditions in Rwanda. And as we know, he's been shaved, his head's been shaved, and he's wearing these demeaning pink clothing after being kidnapped. So the issue is extremely, it's an urgent issue, and we want to have the American government, the Belgian government, intervene to set things straight and go back to square one.
Yes.
And if necessary, try and extradite him. Yes. Let him go through the legal procedures in the U.S. or in Belgium.
Yes. Let me just ask you there. You underline, I think, very important for listeners to know that there's been a kind of sleight of hand betrayal of his rights by the United States and Canadian governments by saying, well, we're going to insist there be transparency and a fair trial, but their responsibilities begin in Dubai. And I noticed that Peter Robinson, a quite well-known lawyer for practicing cases at The Hague and in Tanzania at tribunals, he has already faulted the representatives. Unfortunately, Mr. Russo Savagina was brought into court and people began to argue in his behalf, except that they left out the most important point. How did he happen to end up in court? And why aren't the American and Belgian governments demanding that if they want to have him in custody, they have to bring their case before a Belgian or US court? And one last question, I should say apropos of that, he's being treated as has a political twist to it in that they've already shaved his head, which is what they do with prisoners in Rwanda, which is demeaning. They've shaved his head and they put him in prison garb, which, as you know, you kind of look guilty if you put somebody in prison gear. That's one of the things about presumption of innocence. You appear as who you are, not as how they want you to look, right?
You said it very well, Phil. And we are very concerned about the US and Belgium trying to wash their hands of their responsibilities here. And the council, who did not raise this issue, personally, as a lawyer myself, neglecting a key issue is almost ground for discipline, but that's, I guess, up to the Kigali Bar or the legal authorities in Rwanda. And let's hope that his council now can raise these issues. And let's hope that the East African Court will render a judgment. Of course, what's important is that our listeners and your listeners understand the stakes, and hopefully this will have an effect on his trial.
Yeah, there are websites now, Facebook, whatnot. Basically, you just go Free Paul Russo Savagina, you begin to find the family and friends and supporters and around the world who want to see due process and also would like to see, you made a great point to need to underline, which is that the US, and I think Peter Robinson pointed this out as well, has been very cooperative with the government of Rwanda. When they want somebody from the US, there's been hearings and whatnot, but they make their argument and they usually win. But they didn't make the argument in the case of Paul Russo Savagina, which shows it's a political matter, because he is a quite prominent and highly respected individual. He's committed to nonviolence, that's his life and outlook.
And they probably don't have evidence yet.
Yes.
And for those of us who've been involved in these trials of Rwandans, often they get to court and they don't have evidence, and then they spend 6 months or a year inventing the evidence. And I think that's probably the situation right now.
In the case of, I recall, Victoire Ingabire, they put her in prison for 8 years. And I think they did this to the prominent singer. They bring in somebody from prison who says, yes, I was part of a conspiracy with them. And I mean, that is a very ugly trick. Obviously, you have people in prison who would like not to be there. And also, the mistreatment of prisoners is legendary in the case of this government.
Yeah, and it's for those of us who practice law, the idea of having someone turn his jacket, we know that in Canada and the US. It's a common process, which has led to, as we know, many innocent people spending their lives in jail in the US and in Canada too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've covered that very well. By the way, people go to johnphilpott.com and find information, I'm sure, as well. And Russo Paul's daughter, Corinne, is available on the internet. I thank goodness for the internet where voices are available. Where you can get information.